Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Let's get this conversation started. This episode of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast is brought to you by the Switch, Pivot, or Quit SPQ Strategy Sessions. If you are looking to make a change in your personal, professional life and you just kind of stuck on what's next, how do I get started, what do I do, I need to talk this through with someone, I need some tools, I need some encouragement, I need some ideas, I need some resources, I need solutions. If you are feeling like that, the Switch, Pivot, or Quit strategy sessions are perfect for you. Head over to switchpivotorquit.com and book your session today. So today we have one of our favorite special guests. You guys probably can already guess who it is. She's back for another stellar collaboration. Welcome, Sable, back to the show.
Hello.
Hey, hey, hey. So today we're going to be giving you 5 resume tips to bag that job. So if you don't know, Sable is an extraordinaire and a wonder when it comes to helping you finesse things so that you can position yourself in the most appealing light. Now, she doesn't just spend her days working on helping people update and revamp and, make their resumes shine, but this is a skill set of hers. So I wanted to tap her to chat with us a bit about ways that you guys can pretty much present yourselves better or to the best of your ability as we head into a new chapter being new year. And I know that what happens is a lot of times when you go into a new year, people are thinking, okay, what are my goals? What should I be doing? What do I want to do? And it's not actually just new year. It's new year. It's when your birthday rolls around or when you have a big, a big life-changing experience and you're like, okay, I need to get it together. I need to do this. I need to do that. Something shakes up your world. You feel the same way. So you can use these tips at any point in time in the year, but I just thought heading into January, it'd be a good idea for us to just go over some things that you could use immediately if this is something that's on your radar to switch, pivot, or quit. So, Sable.
Yes.
You see a lot of resumes. Let's actually start off with, I want to do something just fun real quick. And when I say fun, it might be a little bit like fun because it's like talking a little bit of mess, but let's a little fun to start us off with. What are some of the common, like, dense, duh mistakes that you see with resumes that people, show you and they want, let's say, enhanced?
Spelling, grammar. Spelling mistakes, grammar, just, oh no. Like, people clutch their pearls. It's one of those, like, teacher biting the pencil, like. Right. So those happen a lot. References available upon request, that hurts me. it hurts my feelings, especially I've seen resumes, they were really good and then that line was at the bottom and it just tanked their score. It was just like a straight fail. It's just like pass or fail. Yeah. That was a fail.
Okay, but actually we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that later. So you don't have to tell us why. Okay. But
with
I agree.
Some other ones. I would say spelling and grammar are definitely it's like, no matter who you are and what level you're in at your career, like, there's just no reason for a spelling mistake. Grammar, give or take, what was your first language? I might can give you a pass for that, but I cannot with spelling of simple things. It's just like, have somebody else take a look at it.
Right. It's that simple. You know what? It comes down to effort and how much you care about your own presentation, because like you said, it's simple to have somebody look at it or run it through a quick spell check. So it's just like, if you pass along a resume that does not have, or that has tons of spelling errors or even a few, then it's like, do you really care? Did you really?
And there's some mistakes that they've shown, like the human eye does not pick up on. Mm-hmm. But then there are some mistakes. It's just like, ooh,
that was careless.
That was just not. That's just not okay.
Right. Okay, so let's get into the 5 resume tips to bag that job. What's the first one?
So the first one is the hardest for people to do. I give them homework assignments, because whether you're a client or not, the reality is I don't know what you do. You know, I know your title. I can look at your resume, but I don't know all the details. I wasn't with you every day at all the different jobs. And it's the idea of quantifying your experiences. And it's really hard to get that point across to people. Mm. And I can't exactly pinpoint why, but I tell literally everyone I've ever spoken to, it's like, listen, I know you think you're special. And I know you think you're unique. And you know what? You are special. You are unique. But this resume is not.
Right.
I can find 1,000. Let's get dramatic. 100,000 other resumes that look just like yours, because we're all doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. There's no difference on paper between teacher one and teacher two of the same grade in the same subject. Mm-hmm. There's no difference between PR and entertainment and one and two, year one out of college at the same company. It's like, we're all doing the same thing.
Right.
So one of the easiest ways to separate yourself so you can look like you're, you know, unique and as interesting as you think you are, is to quantify your experiences. Mm-hmm. So like, what's your return rate? What's your success rate? Did the student's reading level go up? For all the places you pitched, how many people responded? How many resulted in the interview? So it's like, put a number to the things that you do. Because then when I start to look at candidate one and candidate two, I'm like, oh, candidate one knows the basic skills. Candidate one is not being successful. Candidate two also knows the basic skills, but there's something about candidate two that is working for her or him, because we'll say her because we're girls. But like candidate two, she, out of, you know, her 30 pitches, she secured 15 of them. 50% is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, candidate two, she increased sales by 30% in one quarter and saved the company $10,000 in whatever fee. Like, literally quantify your experiences, because we are all doing the same thing at a very basic level.
Right. So when they put out these calls for submissions for positions, it's not that they think a whole bunch of people are going to apply that aren't qualified and they're going to have to pick amongst the people who are qualified. No, most people that are going to apply are qualified on some level. So then it's a matter of who shines, who stands out. And just for clarification purposes, quantifying means numbers. It means percentages. Numbers. It means showing growth from this to that. Just think in terms of, what would you want to hear? What would you want?
Like, if you, I always tell people, would you hire you?
Yeah.
With this resume?
What would make you impressed?
Yeah. What would make you impressed?
Right.
It's like, if it's a lawyer, how many times have you gone to trial? How many times have you won? If you were a trial lawyer,
right.
Or with insurance agent, you know, how many cases did you settle and save the company money? Like, literally, keep a track record of your successes so you can quantify them. Because once people understand what I'm asking for, the issue becomes they don't know the number.
Yeah, that's a very good point too. As you're going along, whether you're thinking about making a switch, pivot, or quit immediately or not, like, let's say it's just in the back of your mind, keep a little notebook, personal notebook on your desk by your computer or something, where you can just jot down quick numbers. Because sometimes what happens too is that you may get like a report back. Let's say in PR, you may work on a campaign and you may send the campaign out to be quantified by another source, like a third party. You may get this report back and it says that you had, you know, 1.2 million impressions. It was $500,000 in worth of ad value that was generated. All those types of numbers, you may not recall them and remember them right off the top of your head. So it was a good idea to write that stuff down or forward that email
to your personal email
if you don't feel like it's going to get you in trouble, because you also don't want to knowingly take proprietary or private information. Yeah, you don't want to get in trouble, but if you nothing else record. Jot it down, because you need it for you, especially if it's a if it's a campaign that you played a large role in, and then on your resume emphasize that, right? Let them know what role. Call the name of it. Let's say it was a national campaign.
Say the name of it. If you are in charge of Dove, I don't remember the name, but the different Dove beauty campaigns, say you were. So it's like, definitely quantify it. And what Ayana said with keeping a little notebook or, you know, a note in your phone, make it easy for you. You know, you want to write it down because you might remember at this job, but then when you get to your next job, you're not going to remember two jobs ago. And then you end up like my clients who are trying to quantify something they did 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. You don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
You just literally, like, life happened. You don't remember. So write it down.
Yeah. Okay. And what's our next tip?
So this is a pet peeve for my poor dramatic soul. You know, I need you guys to know this. It's connected to point one in a sense that we are all doing the same thing, but a lot of us, that's what we write on our resume. We write down the menial tasks. You answered the phone. Ma'am, no. Unless you were the secretary, like, or you were the office manager, there are just certain tasks that are associated with your job that do not need to go on your resume unless you want to come across. Yeah, they're literally, if it's a given, you don't need to put it down. And it's the idea of, remember, a separation is differentiating yourself between candidate one and candidate two. So it's highlighting your accomplishments over those given tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've seen people write, I can't think of how it's usually phrased off the top of my head, but they'll say, you know, and, you know, other administrative tasks as needed. That's a wasted bullet point.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Nobody asked you that. Right. So it's highlighting your accomplishments. If you were the lead coordinator of a campaign, that's an accomplishment. That goes on your resume.
Mm-hmm.
If you secure new funding that increased the budget 25% in 6 weeks or a quarter, you know, two quarters, whatever, that is an accomplishment. That goes on your resume.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you budgeted $500,000 and you increased the budget to $1 million, that's an accomplishment. That goes on your resume. You don't just put random balanced accounts. How much in accounts? If you're in finance, did you work on special client teams? Did you work with American Express? Did you get them new money, new impressions? So it's literally highlight your accomplishments. Mm-hmm. If your boss gave you a high five and said, good job, write that down in your notebook, because that was perceived as an accomplishment. Like, think about it. If your boss were talking about you, or whoever you report to whoever they report to, are they going to say, oh my God, Sable answers that phone so well, Mr. Clean? Oh, never seen somebody answer the phone like that. No, they're going to say, do you know that Angel, she went on lunch with Mr. Peter from American Express. And within an hour of her returning from the office, I got the email that said they're going to sign over the paperwork. Like, we got the client. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to be discussed.
Right.
That's what goes on the resume.
Right, right. And you just want to pay attention to the way that you're presenting yourself on paper, because this is your chance to shine and to highlight and to brag. If you don't brag and if you don't highlight yourself at any other point in your life, this is the time that you should take advantage of that opportunity. And you should say things that maybe haven't been said before about you, like, or that you haven't felt like you needed to share with other people. Like Sable just said, if someone gave you praise for doing an excellent job on a project, you can, especially if this is an industry known person and you are looking for a job within your industry, you can actually use that to your advantage and say the president and CEO remarked da 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 da. Especially if you don't have that many bullet points. And if you don't have that many bullet points for a specific position, that is fine. It is better to have stronger bullet points than to have 10 weak bullet points.
Let's talk about the bullet points too.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, let's say 3 bullet points that are really good and strong, and then you have 7 more that are weak that just didn't need to be included. Because the other thing that you don't want people doing is you want people to look at your resume and be impressed. You don't want them to look at your resume and judge you, you know? And unfortunately, as much as we all like try to not judge people, it happens. Yeah. Especially if you're in a position of hiring manager, and you're basically trying to weed through people, you're going to start judging. So you want to put yourself in a position where people are not looking at you like, why did she say this? Or why did she not say that? Or what is this resume? You want them to look at it like, wow, she's so stellar. I want to call her in.
The idea of being precise, which is how we end up with, well, not being precise is how we end up with these 3-page resumes,
right?
Because you've had 6-7 roles in your 10-12 year career, and each role has 10-14 bullet points, half of which don't need to be there,
right? So
this wasn't even a tip that I was thinking of, but you don't, for a role, a previous jobs, honestly, 3 to 5 is your sweet spot. You don't need more than that. The most bullet points, if you use that structure for the resume, the most bullet points is important in your most current job, not your previous jobs. 3 to 5 is a sweet spot. The further back, the less bullet points it receives.
Absolutely.
And your strongest bullet point should be at the top. Mm-hmm. I had read through 7 boring bullet points, and then I got to, she managed over $10 million.
Right.
In client money at the end. What if this was somebody else, they would have tossed your resume to the side.
Right.
Why was that not at the top? So when you are organizing your thoughts and your bullet points, put the strongest one at the top. And if you have to ask yourself, do I really need it? No, you don't.
And also don't think in terms of chronological order, because a lot of times when we're trying to recall things that we've done in previous positions and we're trying to recall them so that we can put them in a resume format, we tend to get stuck with, well, I did this first, then I did that. That's not what matters. What matters is exactly what Zabel said. What are the strongest things? The things that
those are your accomplishments, which is why I said highlight your accomplishments over your the day-to-day.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so what's our third tip?
So I realized that I need to meditate after this because apparently I have a lot of pet peeves, y'all. this is another one. And it's a pet peeve in a sense that I want all of us in 2018 to do some self-reflection in the month of January and the rest of December. So by the time February comes, we're ready to live life. Focus on your core skill set. So many people have a skill section on their resume, or they have core competencies. I mean, there's different ways you can say it, but it all boils down to a skill section. And they have a skill up there like Microsoft Office. First of all, you're lying. When you think about all the components of Microsoft Office, I've yet to meet someone who could actually use every program within Microsoft Office. So please, for the record, stop saying that.
Right. Or master every program.
That master every program, Excel. Most folks though, they use Excel, and no, they don't. They don't.
Not in depth.
Like if you just write in names and information in columns and you didn't use not one formula or graph, you don't know Excel. It's okay, but you don't. So that's the first thing. Please stop putting all of Microsoft Office Suite on there because it's just not factual. But besides that, when I ask people, what do you do skill-wise? What are you good at? Both technical skills, so your hard skills and your soft skills. 50% of the people that I work with, who are all women, cannot answer that question. That is a problem because that means if you get through the first stage and actually get a phone interview or in-person interview, when they ask you these questions in a, with different phrasing and different wording, you're not going to be able to answer it. Because if you don't know what you do and what you do well, that's a problem.
Right. And we're at the time where you need to know what you do well. You need, you don't, if you're listening to this right now and you don't exactly know what you do well, make this your mission for the next 6 months to figure out and identify, what do I do well? What are my strengths?
And if you are struggling, if you're struggling answering that question, ask some friends that you can, that you trust. Ask a coworker that you know will give you honest, objective feedback, because you're good at something. You're just having a problem highlighting it yourself, but you need to know, because why should I hire you if you can't even tell me what you're good at?
Right. And you know, another way, another tool that you can use is past performance reviews. A lot of times managers will highlight some of the things that they think are your strengths within your performance review. So you can go back to some of those. I know those are always times of a little bit of like of a roller coaster ride, because you know, you're trying to figure out, you're trying to perform your best, you're trying to wrap everything up in a nice pretty bow, you're trying to figure out if you're going to get a promotion or raise. So sometimes it's not always the most comfortable time, but because it's the off time, go back to that and look at your performance review and see what you can pull from it. Even if your manager didn't say something specifically, they didn't say the very specific words that you're looking for, see what you can glean from what they said that will give you context clues as to what they might be trying to say some of your strengths are, or what you might know to be your strengths. And then coupled with what their feedback was, you're like, okay, this is solidified, guaranteed a strength of mine now. Use everything that you have at your disposal to make your case for yourself.
And for those of you who aren't in hardcore corporate world, I know sometimes the reality of performance reviews are a very interesting thing.
Right.
So if you're in a space where you're not getting that kind of feedback, or it's not structured or what have you, you can go online and find some examples, some doc, like literally Google performance review questions, doc, whatever, download that, print it or what have you, and send it to those people that you would ask them, what are you good at? And say, can you take 5-10 minutes and fill this out for me? I'm trying to elicit feedback so I know what skills I need to work on or strengthen. If these people are good people and you have a good relationship with them, they're not going to tell you no. It might take them 2-3 weeks to get it back to you, depending on what type of document you send them and you know what their schedule looks like. But they'll give it to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. I love everything so far. So let's keep this moving. Number 4.
So listen, I love you, and I love, you know, and when I say you, I mean whoever's listening to us right now. You are dear to me, okay? Without you, there is no me. I appreciate you.
You faceless, nameless person.
Okay. I appreciate faceless, you. Nameless person. No, I'm just, I appreciate you. And once you hear this, feel free to slide into my DMs and put the name to the face so then I can flirt with you in DMs. But if you're not the person who does this, you know someone who does this. So I need you to take it upon yourself to help me spread the word. Unless you are fresh out of college or still in college, please, 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 I beggeth of thee to remove it from your resume. One, it dates you. Like we live in a society that once a woman turns 35, she's old, okay? Mm-hmm. She's so not old, but that's what happens. So if nothing else is motivation to let it go, the fact that you don't want to deal with ageism in the workplace prematurely, aka like pre-40, pre-45, pre-50, let it go because it dates you.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I hope that you're doing amazing things and you've had so many accomplishments since college. You don't need to highlight those experiences anymore to make yourself look good on paper. Because I have realized from talking with people that tends to be where it stems from. It's like, oh, like, you know, when I was fresh out of college and I didn't have all these work experiences, I wanted to differentiate myself. Well, baby girl, you were no longer fresh out of college. So you don't, that's not working against you. Mm-hmm. Entry level employeeship is not working against you. So scratch it. Move on. Let it go. If you graduate from high school and college and have your master's and working on a dissertation, I can assume that you graduated from high school,
right?
Simply because you're working on your, like, take that off. Take that off. GPAs from college, nobody cares. Take that off. I know you worked hard for it. I know you studied. I know you didn't party as much. I know you were president of the debate team, the cheer team. I know that you wrote articles for the school newspaper. You were fabulous. Let it go.
Right.
Let it go.
Especially if it is making your resume, if it's cluttering up your resume and making it longer than it
now needs. It's 3 pages.
Yeah, take that off. It's just not required. And also, you know, pay attention to, like she said, not having the years. And we're not saying take off the fact that you graduated from XYZ University or what have you. We're saying take off years. Take off the year that you graduated and just leave it at the accomplishment of having graduated with a
master's
this or whatever, and leave it at that. But also, if you find that there's leftover crumbs from your college career on your resume, take those things off. Even if it's in a section that is like your skills section or something like this, and you're like, created the backdrops for the drama club.
Take it off.
You still may be in design and you may be looking to go into creative direction or something like that. That's fine. You need to start working on some other ways to showcase your current talents though, because that not sufficient. No, no.
And I will add this note. There are things from college that can stay on a resume, but those are the top elite percentage things that stay on the resume. The fact that you're on a dean's list, I can find dean's list members a dime a dozen.
Right.
That comes off. But if you were elected in some super elite position from the college president and therefore ended up in the town's newspaper. Notice I didn't say the college newspaper. I said the town. Like, there are things you can leave there, but I want you to realize it's like the equivalent of being elected into office in the U.S. If it's not at that level of an accomplishment,
right,
take it off.
Right. And since we're telling you these things to take off, and if you might be thinking like, oh, I really want to make a switch, pivot, or quit. So I was going to put some of this stuff from my college days on because it speaks to some of the things that I feel like I want to be doing now in making my pivot or switching or quitting. So one of the things that you can do to make things relevant for yourself right now is, A, you can take some classes. There's certifications that you can get online. And there's also volunteer work.
I was going to say current volunteer.
Yeah. Those things go a long way because it says two things. It says, A, you're being proactive about the things that you're interested in. And especially if you're trying to maybe pivot or if you're trying to, let's say you're working in one department and you want to move to another department, it's showing, okay, you're taking initiative to do work in that space. But then it also says you care. You care enough to give back to your community or to give back to a community. Whatever it is, the volunteer work that you're doing, it shows that you're going out of your way to be proactive. And that's what you want, because people want proactive employees. And also, that's another thing that I actually just thought of. Any way that you can make it on your, or you can highlight on your resume that you were proactive in a situation and you took initiative and you did something that was extremely above and beyond for that position, maybe even for that company, you created something. Those things are great, because whenever people are looking to hire people, we always want problem solvers. We want initiative takers. We want people that are just intuitive about things, especially in certain areas of business. That's why some people really excel, let's say, in finance and investments and stuff. Okay, because there's just this intuitive thing about them. They know when to look into certain things. They know when the market feels like this, or like it's something intuitive about it. Use those things to your advantage too, even if maybe that isn't the sector of business that you are in, but you want to go into an area of business where you found yourself being very intuitive about that area of business. Use that to your advantage as well. All we're saying, total packages, use everything that you have to your advantage, basically. And really start searching and digging. And, you know, I'm going to say this, personal development helps you to wrap your mind around a lot of this. If you are doing the personal development work outside of your 9-to-5, some of this will become easier. You will have clarity with some of these things because you're now exploring and really getting to the meat of what's going on with you and how you present and all of those things. So just pay attention to what you can be doing to be proactive to make yourself really shine in these scenarios.
And just to give you all some context, because there's always debates on one-page resume versus two-page resume versus something longer. Here's the thing why I usually say, let's do one unless you really, really need to do two. Personally, usually the person who has less than 10 years of experience does not need two pages. Did not do much in 10 years to need two pages. Once someone starts tinkering between that 12, 15 year plus mark, I can understand two pages. Very rarely do you need to go over two, because listen here, ladies and gents, and I know you have some gents that listen and just don't tell you, Ayana.
Right. But
there's a difference between a resume and a CV, a curriculum vitae. They didn't ask you for your CV. Your CV is where you put everything. Mm-hmm. They ask you for your resume. That's the short and concise version of your CV. And your resume should be tailored to the job you're applying for. So certain experiences don't fit the job, so they don't go on your resume for that job. They stay on your CV. Right. So I have a CV. It's like 5 pages long. It has everything. It has random college things. It has random speaking engagements. It has all sorts of stuff. But when I apply for certain things, I take from that CV and plot together what makes sense to give them a one-page resume for that position.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you said that as well, like taking things from your CV, because the other thing to keep in mind is that once this resume is created or crafted, whether it be by you or someone else, it is not going to stay exactly the same for every position that you apply for. You should be prepared and ready to highlight certain skills at the top of the bullet points if it fits that job description. More so, you know, switch things around so that you can make them work in your favor. Don't just present the exact same resume because you're being lazy and you're thinking, oh, they'll get it. No, they probably won't get it. You know, and if you're not giving enough of the attention and taking the initiative to switch things around with your resume, what makes you think that you're going to stand out to them and they're going to care so much about you, this person they've never met before, don't know, don't have anything invested, or they're not even interested in you? You have to make them interested. What makes you think that they are going to go out of their way to say, oh, I just happened to find this little diamond in the rough. I had to scour through every bit of it to pull out all the gems, but this is a good one. No, it'll be in the recycle bin before you know it. So just get accustomed to creating a
standard base. And you want to tailor.
Yes. Create a standard base and then tailor, basically.
And you really, really want to tailor. And I'm going to push for one page. You already heard my rationale between one versus two, because studies have shown you get 8 seconds.
Right.
So if the average person, hiring person, is only looking at your resume and every other resume that ends up in front of them for only 8 seconds, all of your good stuff needs to be on page one anyway, because they're not flipping to page two. Done. You got 8 seconds to make a point, to make an impression.
Yeah.
That's why quantifying your experience is helpful, because the eye naturally goes to numbers. Right. We can gloss over words really quickly, but if I start seeing 100% 1,000 applicants, like just numbers, that's where my eye is going to be driven to.
Right.
So yeah, you have 8 seconds. You literally, you know, you want to make those 8 seconds count. And here's another thing. Most resumes are not touching the person anyway. They're going to a computer program. Mm-hmm. The computer programs are programmed. They have their own algorithm and they're programmed to scan for keywords. You have to make it through the computer program before you get into the hands of a person that's only going to last there for 8 seconds. So when you know you have these different variables in place or barriers against you, depending on how you look at it, you want to make sure you're not approaching your resume writing from an emotional angle and from a very strategic angle, which is why, you know, Ayana said tailor, which is why I'm saying one page, which is why we're saying push your important information to the top. Make sure your resume is tailored to the job description, because this is not back in the day where you could mail your resume in and HR is going to open that envelope and they're going to sit there with it. Those days are long and gone. So
yeah,
you want to be as strategic as possible.
You know, the other thing I want you to touch on, say, was what we talked about before we got started. Just if people are thinking of making a switch, pivot, or quit, and they're thinking like, wow, I'm really well versed in this area of business, but I really want to transfer into this other department and apply for this position within my company. Maybe, you know, I want to make a switch. How can they use their core skill sets to sort of make that transition on paper?
This is why it's really important to know what your skill set is. What do you do? What are you good at? Because what you'll realize is that no matter the industry, the skills are the same across the board. The only difference is the application of those skills and what you do with those skills. So if you had interpersonal skills and you were a nurse and now you want to go into marketing, well, nurses deal with really difficult patients and they have to sell the medicine to the patient so they'll cooperate and take it. Of course, that goes into like a story you could put in your cover letter, but it's really, you have to sit there and think outside the box.
Can you pull out from your days as being, exactly. being a nurse? Was there a situation where you had to deal with a sales environment? Was there a situation where
do you want to go into patient advocacy? Mm-hmm. Did you ever find yourself advocating for a patient who wasn't getting the best treatment because they had complicated or no insurance? Because some people have like 2 and 3 types of medical insurance and that can get really convoluted really quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's really thinking outside of the box and starting with what are your skills in my current industry and my current experiences? What instances can I show? Like, what stories can I tell that highlight that skill set? Okay, how can I rephrase that story that it would make sense to someone in a different industry because it's different jargon? And that's really what's important to get people to realize. Like I said from jump, the skills are the same across the board. The jargon associated with those skills is what changes. So you need to know what your skills are, period, point blank. You need to know how to convey them, how to tell that story, how to highlight those accomplishments using those skills on your resume. And then when you're making that industry change, if you don't have any experience with it, one, volunteering helps. So volunteer in that new industry, find opportunities to dibble and dabble in that new industry, because what you'll have to learn is the jargon. Mm-hmm. Once you learn the jargon for said industry, you'll be able to convey, because it's literally learning the second language. Marketing has their own jargon. Law has their own jargon. Within law, the different sectors within law have their own jargon. Education, private versus public versus charter, everyone has their own jargon. So do that research to learn that jargon so you can use that jargon when you're highlighting your accomplishments and your skill set on your resume. Speak their language.
Right.
And please don't say, oh, they'll know what I'm talking about.
No.
The people at HR, that HR is their skill set. They don't know.
Right. They have no idea or little insight most of the time into the specific positions within the company. They have a general knowledge.
Yeah.
So that they can help hire, but they don't know the day to day. But you know, I like that you touched on research too, because I think that people sometimes don't put enough emphasis on that aspect of things, especially if you're looking to make a switch, pivot, or quit. You can't just say, you know what, I think I want to go from I want to go from, let's say
public health to higher education.
Right. You can't just say, you know what? I've been so good in this space and I've been able to connect with people and I'm a natural leader. So I think I should just be able to get hired. No, research. What are some of the people that you would be competing with? And by competing with, I mean, whatever level that you're trying to enter this industry at, what are some of those people that are successful at that level? What are they doing? What are they accomplishing? What types of places are you seeing their names pop up in? You know, are they getting articles written about them because they've accomplished XYZ? What are some of the things that you notice and observe to be strengths for them? And I think that a lot of times people just have this surface view of things like, oh, I want to make a switch, pivot, or quit. I'm so tired. I'm unfulfilled in my job. I want out of it. I want to do this now. But they don't really take the time to look at what that looks like for them and what it looks like for the industry, because sometimes it's that grass is greener on the other side thing. Because you are so disappointed and fed up with your current position, everything about this everything new industry better. Looks better. It looks good. It's perfect for you. Why didn't you figure out this years ago? Yeah, I can't wait. But then because you haven't really taken the time to personally develop and do your research as well, you now happen to get into this other industry, and then you a year later you find yourself just as miserable.
You hate it.
Yeah, because you need to take the time to research and see what it really entails, and also research yourself. So there's a lot of legwork that goes into being the best that you can be and really presenting yourself in a good light, as well as showcasing your talents and being the best person that you can be so that you can then continue to excel and, you know, succeed. There's a lot that goes into that. It's not just, well, these people that you see and they have this perceived success and things like that, it's not just by accident. It's intentional most times.
It's very intentional. And you know? Strategic. They had a plan.
Yes, yes. So I'm saying all that to say, don't just look at another industry and then just go and try and find the keywords, apply and think it's all gravy and this is perfect and you should get the job now. Really see what's going on with the people that are excelling and succeeding in that space and see what you have that could then bring you over there and make you succeed and excel as well. The other thing that you don't want to do is transfer and go from one industry to the next only to not be so good at it. You know what I mean? Or hate it. And that's why you're not so good at it. Like, you want to make strategic moves, like Sable said. So hopefully this is giving you guys some idea of why we're saying some of the things that we're saying, because you don't want to waste your own time either, nor do you want to waste someone else's time, but they will give you less of an opportunity to waste their time. Okay. That 8 seconds that Sable was talking about, where they'd be like, never mind, out of here, recycle bin. Okay. So let's move on to the fifth and final resume tip to bag that job.
I love this title.
Me too.
So this last one is so short. You ready, y'all? Mm-hmm. I wish I could say like DJ drop that beat, but I can't.
I might be able to work out a beat for you.
But it's simply this. References are not, and I repeat, are not available upon request. Ladies, give it a rest. Yes. I rhymed. I had to. That's a waste of line. Here's the thing. Because I've had people say, why? I need it. Back in whatever day, that became the hit line to end every resume. Like, it was at the line of everyone's resume. It was just that thing. Like, you had to have an objective. You had to say references available. Well, just like you no longer have to have an objective, you no longer need to say references are available upon request. And to me, it's really like a duh statement. If they want to talk to your references, they're going to request them.
And you're going to oblige.
Yeah, you're going to give them.
You're not going to say no.
Yeah, like, you don't need to give them permission to ask you.
Right.
To act like it's a given. It's just part of the hiring process.
Right.
So if you have yourself, with a 2-page resume and you have one line on the second page, if you got rid of that last line, ta-da, you're down to 1 page. Save the space. If they want to talk to your people, they will tell you, I want to talk to your people.
Yeah, that's so true. They'll get in touch. And if you're far enough along in your career and you started making major moves, they might not even talk to your people because they might be able to just Google you.
Yeah, they don't talk to your people.
Because quiet as it's kept, the internet can be your reference, whether that's good or bad. Remember that.
That's true. But like you just don't.
Yeah, you don't need it. It's just unnecessary at this point. And the other thing with references that always cracks me up is, of course, everybody's going to give a reference that's going to sing their praises. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody really wants to find out about you, that's why I say your internet can be your reference. Because if they really want to find out about you, they will go digging and do some research. And it might not be the most PC way to do it, but that doesn't mean that there's something out there to stop them. They can go and do research on you and call on people, email people that you didn't even refer. But they're trying to cover their butt and making sure that you're the best employee or a potential hiree for the position. So they're inquiring. But everything is so, all information is so accessible now that it's hard to police that, and you can't even get, like, really get mad, and you can't say, oh, I didn't expect that. Everybody has access to everything. You can almost email anybody you want now. You can find out contact information for almost anybody you want now. So if I know you worked at XYZ company and you held this position, I can probably find someone on LinkedIn who worked with you and send them a quick message. So like she said, no need to say references available upon request, because they will find out what they need to know.
Yeah. Anyway. And like she said, if you're high enough up, they don't need to do that, because chances are the reason why your resume is in front of them is because a colleague or someone referred you, which leads me to my last bonus tip. Although I feel like there's been like four bonuses, but who's counting, because I'm not. With all this information we're giving you about your resume, make sure you're nurturing your network, because most jobs are acquired by way of relationship anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can have the prettiest resume that is just popping from top to bottom, but if you don't have that person who can put it in the hand of, you know, XYZ hiring manager, or the person who knows the hiring manager, your chances drop. And it's not to be discouraging, which is why I said, make sure you're nurturing your network and building your network, because most jobs are still given out and received and acquired, obtained, whatever verb you want to use, by way of relationship. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can definitely get jobs. I call it, you know, it was like cold call. Yeah. Cold emailing, cold submissions. Like, you can, people still get hired that way. But, you know, if you have a strong network, you can get hired both ways. And for those of you who might be trying to break into an industry, that might make life a lot easier by having someone who could vouch for you and say, like, oh, she's dope. Like, you're dumb for not hiring. Mm-hmm. Like, you literally want someone to say that. Like, look, I know she hasn't been in entertainment. I know she's been in higher education. Look, she had to entertain those students, didn't she? Just put a resume. Just bring her in for an interview. If you don't like her, you don't like her. But trust me, once she's in the room, you're going to want to give her a contract. You want those kind of people on your team. So in the midst of making your resume pop, and make sure you are still staying in contact with the people that you know. Mm-hmm. Who could do some of the heavy lifting for you. And by heavy lifting, I mean like email introductions, not actual heavy lifting.
And they probably won't mind. And the other thing that I hope you take away from what Sable was just saying is that even if you haven't yet to enter an industry, but you have your eye on it and you're looking to make a switch, start becoming friendly with people in that industry. Start immersing yourself in that industry so that when you get ready to make a transition, or you see a position that you really like or you really want, you can then call on that person you've now developed a relationship with and say, hey, this is a big move for me, but I'm ready to make this switch. I would love it if you could, you know, do whatever the ask is, whether it be push my resume along, send in a good word with the hiring manager or the owner of the company, because there's a lot of that happening nowadays too, you know? A lot more people are working in smaller companies in smaller, more intimate environments. So mm-hmm. it might not even require you to jump through as many hoops. It might be a matter of
it's just, not even bureaucratic. There's like two people.
Yeah, exactly. So that's an easier ask if you're trying to switch industries and you already know someone who knows one of the decision makers at the company. Well, you know, that just makes it easier. So just leverage those relationships and start trying to make relationships with people that are in the industry that you would ideally like to be in. Even if you don't know what your place in that industry looks like yet, it's still a good idea to start getting your feet wet. You know, because that person may also take you under their wing and say, hey, let me show you the ropes. I know you're interested. And you might find yourself being an apprentice for somebody. You look up and you're like, wow, I'm sort of like their apprentice now. And now I'm really learning the ropes. And either I like it or I love it and I really want to continue with it. Or this is not what I thought it was.
Or you realize, oh, heck no.
Moving on to my next idea.
Pretty much. You know? This wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. A lot of this is just immersing yourself in the process. Because all of this is a process, you know, when you look at and you think of everything that happens and everything that we do in life, a lot of it is a process. So just be open to the process and be willing to immerse yourself in it so that you can get the best results. Sable, I know you gave us your last tip, but is there any final parting words that you have for us? No pressure.
Yeah, you know, don't make your font super small trying to squeeze everything on one page.
Oh, gosh.
I know you were
probably looking, I've done that before.
Looking for something real Oprah-esque. No, I'm keeping this last tip, this final thought, really pragmatic.
Right.
Please don't make it size 8, 9, 10 font.
Somebody has to get out their pocket.
Their magnifying glass to see it. Like... Don't do it.
That could piss somebody off, too.
And it has.
Realistically, it's not even that it would piss them off and that they would actually struggle to read it. They would just be like, this is ridiculous. And they would toss it away.
So it's like, even though if you really go gung-ho with one page, like I've said, don't force it by doing that. There are different fonts that aren't too bad at 10.
Right.
But the average font at 10 is too small.
Right. You know what? I just thought of something I want to touch on real quick. A lot of us use Canva now, right? And Canva has these resume templates.
Oh, the templates?
Yeah, which look nothing like the traditional standard resume. What are your thoughts about using Canva to create, let's say, a new age resume? And are there parameters to doing like a fun or creative resume?
You know, this is one of those, you could talk to 10 people and...
Yeah,
you
would 10 different answers.
No, not even. It would be 50-50. I always say, this is why looking at the company you're applying to is important.
Right.
Their website or Facebook, social media, if they have one, because you can find out if they're traditional, if they're contemporary, mm-hmm. if they are living in ancient Roman times. Mm-hmm. And what industry are you in? There are industries that lead to creativity and... Right. And, you know, just thinking outside of the box by way of colors and a symbol here and there. Like, for example, an artist, instead of having a traditional bullet point, there are companies, graphic design companies that might think it totally unique if your bullet point was something that you designed.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, no matter the industry, I think it shouldn't be cluttered. It should be easy on the eye.
Right.
And people go too far with creativity and I still don't know where to look. That said, there are very traditional industries that have not moved much. For example, the legal land.
Mm-hmm.
Don't send them a bunch of colors.
Yeah.
Even if it is a children's agency that's looking to hire an attorney. They're mm-hmm. not looking to hire a part-time story time teller. Right. They're looking to hire an attorney. So I think the first step is to really look at your industry. In the last 10, 20 years, has it really evolved
mm-hmm.
or not? If not, stick with traditional. If so, how has it evolved and decide how far you can push the button? Because it goes twofold with the creativity side. It's, oh my God, everyone look at this. She's amazing. We should call her in. oh my God, everyone look at this. Ha ha ha. Toss.
Right. Right. So, right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's important to look at the industry, see how much it's evolved mm-hmm. in the last 10, 20 years. And making the decision that way, I will say legal land, don't even bother.
Yeah, like, there's some professions.
Finance, don't even bother. Like, yeah. There's definitely industries you don't need to bother.
Right.
And there are others where, you know, look at the company's page. Do mm-hmm. we have social media? What does that look like? What does that sound like? And then make your decision that way.
Right.
And all the industries I've been in, it's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. is primarily education and nonprofit land. Yeah, it's as corporate as it gets on paper. Once you get in the door, no. But yeah. on paper, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what matters, is getting in the door. So you need to do what you have to do to present the way that is acceptable for that industry. Yeah, but that makes sense.
I've seen some really creative ones. And especially like if you are on the graphic design and angle, any yeah. kind of design angle, like that's where it's like, okay, you know, show a little flair.
Yeah. But also, like you said, a little flair too, because if you are in the design space, you will probably submit some type of portfolio anyway.
So you don't have to get too really crazy.
Flex. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, which is why I said a little flair. You don't want yeah. it to be distracting, which yeah. is, I think, what happens to a lot of people. They get excited about not, you know, blurring bullet points and what have you, but then it's so just all the way out there, and you're like, well, what can you do?
Where can I focus? Yes.
Yeah.
Information.
So you don't want to be distracting.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a good conversation, and I'm glad we did this. And I'm also glad that we ended up by default, because we are who we are, touching on way more than 5 tips.
I know. If someone really counted, I wonder how many it would be. I failed every estimation quiz back in elementary school. So,
so you're not our go-to. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me on this episode table, and let everybody know where they can keep up with you, find you, and maybe even tap you for their resume services.
So everything is the same across the board. The website is realbrowngirls.com. On Facebook is Facebook, blah, blah, / Real Brown Girls. Instagram, Twitter, @RealBrownGirls. Any of those, you will find me. And by way of Instagram, Facebook, they definitely give you a way to like hit a contact in a message or email. And if you decide to email without looking at any of that, the email is info@RealBrownGirls. So if you use Real Brown Girls, you will find me.
Love it. Okay. Thank you so much for hanging out once again. And as always, you guys keep killing it.